Welcome to the Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge's radio show, AC23. The mission of the Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge is to foster the creative capacity in the Capital Region through advocacy, resources, teaching, and training. Over the next 23 minutes, you'll hear from staff members, artists, and arts organizations throughout our region. If you'd like to hear this episode again, you can find it online at www.artsbr.org.
All right. I would like to welcome once again our listeners to AC23. This is a podcast series put on here by the Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge. In today's session, I have a colleague, friend, Mr. Chris Adams, who works here at the Arts Council, and he has an exciting project he's developing that's going to travel, go to Europe. Going to let him tell you about that. But Chris, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Well, okay, so let's jump right into it. So you have a project going on that involves students from across various parishes, right?
Correct. Six different parishes all through Louisiana, 14 students in total.
Okay. And what is the project called?
We're calling it the Bridges Park Project. We are linking Louisiana through theater.
Mm-hmm.
The Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge was accepted to perform with high school students at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival this season, and it is the largest theater festival in the world. And Rene Chatelain, the president and CEO at the time, and I kind of sat down and we talked about this, and we thought it would be a really great opportunity for some of the students here in Louisiana to be able to travel, and Shell Corporation got behind it, and so here we are a few weeks out.
That's a big deal. I mean, I've never been to that festival, but I know you have.
Yes.
Tell me about that festival.
It began right after World War II as a peace mission, I guess you could say, letting the world know that the UK survived, that they were back, and they were excited to be there. And so they had invited 8 different theater groups to perform at Edinburgh, and there was a bunch of other theater groups that showed up and said, mm-hmm. we want to perform as well. And they said, sorry, there's no room for you. And so they said, well, we're here, we're still going to perform. So they kind of went out to the fringe of the city mm-hmm. and performed. And the same thing happened again next year, and a few more theaters showed up. And here we are 75 years later, and there are something in the neighborhood of 3,500 different performers.
That's incredible.
Over the course of 3.5 weeks, yes.
That was my next question. So the whole thing lasts, this festival lasts for about 3.5 weeks?
Correct. It kicks off on the first Friday of every August, and then it will run through the It's usually August 28th is when it ends, so somewhere around there.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so tell me about the actual show that you're doing, the production.
So the show is called Soundscapes, and it is a very interesting play. It's only about 2.5 years old. It was written by a woman by the name of Claudia Haas and Sarah Craneling. And Sarah is a artist. Both of them live in Wisconsin. And it's kind of Sarah's story. Sarah has what is known as synesthesia.
And what is
which that? Which is a neurological, it's not really a disorder, it's more of a condition.
Mm-hmm.
Think of it in terms of the autism spectrum.
Okay.
As neurodivergent. And most artists actually have this, and what it is when two of your senses are activated simultaneously. And in Sarah's case, when she hears sound, she also experiences the sight sense kicks in, and she sees colors and shapes simultaneously.
Right. You know, I'm a musician by trade, and I don't experience this myself, but I've had many musicians' friends, especially those who have perfect pitch.
Mm-hmm.
When they hear a tone, many of them, not all of them, associate a color with that.
Yes.
I'm assuming that's a very, very much the same thing or very similar.
Yeah, it's actually very, very similar. It works in any kind of possible combination. It seems during my research that a lot of it is sound and color.
Mm-hmm.
Sound and shapes; those two are working together. It's approximately 4% of the population in the world has it. It's actually more common than people with red hair.
Is that right?
It's actually correct.
That's interesting.
Yes.
Have you all been rehearsing this as of now, or
began the process about 18 months ago when we identified our 14 students, and we begun kind of in earnest this past spring. We started working, and then we're going to really hit the ground really hard in the next 2 weeks, mm-hmm. and then through July 4th, and we have two performances stateside mid-July.
So if people want to see it here, where will it be, and are they able to go see it?
Absolutely. So half of our students are coming from St. Mary's Parish in Franklin.
Okay.
And we're going to be doing a performance down there at their, I think it's called Techie Theater, or Tech Theater with an E.
Yeah.
Right there on their main street. On Friday, July the 18th,
mm-hmm.
and then Saturday on the 19th, we will be performing it at the Manship Theater.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. At the Hartley Bay.
Yeah, it's a great setting.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So what is your role? Are you directing this, or how
I guess you'd call it the director-producer.
Okay, all in one?
Yeah, all in one. I've had the opportunity, this will be my sixth time traveling over there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's incredibly fortunate, and trying to bring a new look to this. I've spoken with the playwright. She's very, very excited about what we're going to be doing with it. We're going to be using some original music, which actually you composed for us.
I know a little bit about that.
Yes, yeah. Just a hair.
Yeah.
And then we're also going to be using video animation,
mm-hmm.
To hopefully give the audience a little bit of taste of what she experiences. She's a prolific artist. She has her own website. Her work is amazing. And actually our cover that we're using for the production is actually one of her pieces.
So will the creator of the show, will she be there in attendance?
We've been talking about it. She would love to come and see it. She's never been to Edinburgh.
Yeah.
And this will be a huge feather in her cap that it's being performed. We requested about a year ago when we decided on the show, I reached out to Claudia and I asked her something that most artists would frown upon was that she restrict the show,
mm-hmm.
that it is not going to be able to be produced during the summer months. And she's agreed to that. That's actually part of our contract. I did hear there will be an exception. There's a group, I believe it's from England, who just won a major competition in their area, and the grand prize was performing it at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
Mm-hmm.
So there'll be two of our productions over there.
Nice.
Yes.
Really nice.
Theirs is a middle school production. Ours will be a high school production.
Now, when you've gone previously, did you have things you were presenting there, or is this the first time?
So this will be my third time presenting. And then the other three times that we had gone, we spend, it's a 2-year process for the directors. The first year, you spend kind of fact finding, looking at the venues, learning your way around. So that way when you get there, because you're responsible for all of your students and all of your chaperones. So you want to make sure that they get to go around correctly. So, it's a much truncated trip while we're there on the even number of years. And then on the odd number of years, we get to perform.
Awesome. That's exciting. That's really cool.
Yes.
Well, you're not new to theater by any means. You have a long background in theater. So can you tell the listeners just, you know, how you got into that and what you've been up to over the years in that world?
So I've been, I guess, more professional side the last 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
I began it when I was in high school. I was a really bad actor. I was that guy who came on in the third act that went hark. And then left. I was like tree number 4 in a forest of 3 trees.
Somebody's got to do it.
And that was me.
Yeah.
And then when I had gotten to undergraduate, I had auditioned for a play just because I was kind of bored. And the chair of the department actually cast me as the lead. And I got to spend some time with some extremely talented people in Pittsburgh, both directors and designers. And they found that I had a unique eye, and they really took me under their wing and began mentoring me.
Mm-hmm.
And after I finished my time at Duquesne University in Pittsburgh, I was fortunate enough to fall into a master's of fine arts program at Virginia Tech,
okay.
who they also felt I had a good eye for those things. And again, I got some amazing master teachers. And was given some incredible opportunities and got to work with some world-renowned playwrights and designers.
I was going to ask you because, you know, as a musician, you know, I guess once I got the bug, I had certain people that I really, you know, idolized or just spent a lot of time studying and learning from, whether it be local or an international level, just, you know, people that I was checking out. So I guess that exists as well, as you're saying, in theater tech. Like, you have people that you really admired that, you know.
Yeah, I just wouldn't even classify it as tech. Like I said, I've gotten to work with, for me, the pivotal time was in graduate school when I worked with the Contemporary American Theater Festival in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, and also at the Humana Festival in Louisville, Kentucky, where I actually worked with the playwrights.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times when you're producing, you don't get those opportunities to work with the playwrights, and it's just like they're sort of an afterthought. They give you the script, and then you can do whatever you want. But here our playwrights are in residence, and as I had said, some were world-renowned Pulitzer Prize-winning playwrights, Tony mm-hmm. Award-winning playwrights and directors.
Right.
And so spending time with them one-on-one, picking their brains, figuring out what it is that they see when they put the pen to the paper gave me a very unique perspective that I had was missing up to that point and had forever changed my trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, incredibly grateful.
Yeah. Well, when I'm thinking back, you know, I initially met you in a completely different setting in the school system where we were both working as educators.
Yes.
So education has obviously been a big part of your pedigree.
Absolutely. That was actually my what I had studied in undergraduate at Duquesne. I was a secondary social studies teacher major.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
So yeah. After graduation, I taught middle school and high school civics and econ, and I was my extra duty contract was doing the theater.
Yeah, cool. That's really cool. And now we're talking about the play that you're doing, but we see each other practically every day during the week at the Arts Council Greater Baton Rouge, where we both work. And what is your job title here?
My title is Director of Technical Operations.
But I see it every day. You wear a lot of hats, a lot of skills going on in this building. So translate that a little bit. Like, what kind of things are you doing here?
Well, the Arts Council is unique in that we own our own building, which is a huge asset and a huge advantage that we have. And so I guess you would think of it in terms of a facility manager would be the easiest way to explain it. I make sure the building stays up and running, but I also handle all of the rentals that come through, all of the leases. We do an enormous amount of programming here, mm-hmm. and that kind of all falls through my desk at one point or the other. And then because of the number of events, we also have a large part-time staff, and I'm responsible for scheduling them and hiring and unfortunately, mm-hmm. firing sometimes.
Can't win them all.
No, not all the time.
Well, jumping back to the play for a minute, like, so when you're working on this, what are some of the, in putting something together like that, what are some of the challenges?
This has been a very unique experience for me. I've always had access to my actors, but pulling from five or six different parishes, I don't see them all the time. They're not in the same town. So we've done some things over Zoom, some telephone calls, traveled down to Franklin quite a bit. Some of our students have come to the Arts Council building here in Baton Rouge. So scheduling's been the biggest obstacle.
Mm-hmm.
As you said, you're a musician, and you kind of have that luxury at times of working remotely. It's a little harder with theater.
I can imagine.
Zoom doesn't quite work so well.
Yeah.
You really need to be in the same room when it comes to working with your characters and your castmates. You can sort of do a little bit of that remotely, but it's just not the same not being in the same room.
Yeah.
So we've done a lot of the legwork. They've done a lot of research, studying of the synesthesia. Actually, one of my castmates has it.
Oh, is that right?
It is. It's been really interesting when she has shared with the rest of the cast what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, it was actually really a humbling experience where we're trying to tell this really great story and someone says, yeah, I know exactly what she's talking about.
That is my story to some degree.
Yeah, it was like, what? And it was right. Just, it kind of took everyone back and she was very honest about it. And we had a really great conversation. And so it's kind of having someone there that really understands it. And so when I'm not exactly sure what Sarah or Claudia had in mind, you know, when she says that she sees this, what is she really experiencing? She can kind of give me a little bit of clue, like what it's like for her. And so that's the biggest, what we're trying to do is give the audience a taste of what it's like for someone who has this condition.
Well, I'm curious, so you discovered that about one of your actors. Does that have any bearing from that point on how the show is sculpted, or how much liberty do you have when those things come up? Can you alter the direction of the show based on those kinds of things, or just in general, do you have much liberty?
No, if we're going to alter the script, we really need to talk to the playwrights about that.
Okay.
And Claudia was very honest. She said it was a new piece, and if we had any insight, she'd be happy to sit down. And if we wanted to make any changes, she'd be happy to do that for us. But overall, I'm very happy with the piece, and I think the story is really great. It captures Sarah in middle school, which I think is a very formative time for a lot of youth.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very difficult age. And so, you know, your puberty is being introduced, which I think is part of the catalyst for the character, but also peer pressure and what it's like to conform and fit in.
Mm.
And we as adults, we experience that all the time, but we sort of downplay it. But it's very much in middle schoolers' face.
Right.
And so, as you know, as an educator, and so we have that opportunity to kind of be honest and hopefully show the world. And what I love about theater is, I think, a good piece, it's a mirror that reflects back society.
Hmm.
And I think Claudia has done an amazing job with that.
Yeah. Well, I know, in thinking about the music part of it and helping you a little bit with that, mm-hmm. the content of the music was centered around Gustav Holst's The Planets.
Yes.
Which is, I mean, it's just an amazing piece of work, symphonic work that I personally love. But why that choice of music as it relates to this play?
When Claudia and Sarah wrote the piece, that was what they had used initially in the workshops. I think being in the public domain helps quite a bit.
Yeah, sure.
They were able to reduce some of the royalty costs. But as you know, that piece has some really great movements in there that evoke certain emotions. Anger, peace, tranquility, and they pulled five of the movements together. We constantly go back to Jupiter. Mm-hmm. That's kind of her centering and her ground. When I spent some time with it, I did listen to it, and I looked at some other music options, and Claudia said we were welcome to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I spent a lot of time listening to lots of other pieces, both in the public domain and royalty-based. And I came back and gave the Planets a second look, and I understood why she went in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I think it's some strong pieces, and when you and I spoke about it, I asked you to pull some of the main themes, and I think you did a really great job of trying to capture what's in my head.
Mm, that's good. Yeah, just the range of that music, of what he wrote, honestly, whether it's orchestrated or not, I mean, just you could play all that music at the piano, and it just mm-hmm. evokes so yes. many different types of emotions, from ethereal, you know, dreamy to majestic, and yeah. you know. So, yeah. So what are the next steps as far as getting, you know, prepped for the first show?
Well, we're kind of in the home stretch now. I think all of the legwork's done. Plane tickets have been bought. Rooms have been reserved.
Logistics. All
the logistics are done. Yeah. So now we just have to spend some time in the rehearsal hall. The students should hopefully be off book by now. Props are just about completed. And so we're just going to start plowing through the story. And now that we are about a month away, we're going to start working on cast chemistry.
What does that mean?
I think you've all have seen television shows or movies or even potentially plays where when two characters talking to each other, it doesn't seem authentic, or it just seems like, oh, they don't like each other. And that's cast chemistry, that we want our cast to be friends, I guess is the easiest way to explain it, even though the middle school is not so friendly, unfortunately. I tried to build in the rehearsal a sense of trust, because unfortunately it is live theater and anything can happen at any time. And if you trust the people that you're on stage with, you feel safe all the time. And what we do is very vulnerable. We're up there telling someone else's story, and it's a very personal story, and it can kind of be lonely up there, and knowing that someone's up there that has your back, and if you forget your lines or a prop doesn't work or a light goes out, that they're there and you can get through it together because you've had this camaraderie and this friendship that is deeper than, it's as deep as fraternities.
I'm curious, you know, when I taught more music in the past, I would always work with students on the things that you don't anticipate will happen, but very often do happen, and how to deal with those situations. I'm thinking acutely about just, you know, you're in a piece and you get stuck, some mental exercise or just methods to get through that. So, like, it sounds like that exists in theater as well. Huh?
Absolutely. I had a conversation just this morning about that. The way I approach it is anything can happen, and Murphy's Law, if it's going to happen, it will happen, that you plan for the unexpected. And what I try to teach my actors is active listening. And I know that term is used and abused all the time.
Right.
But you know the story. You've memorized the lines. You know how it's going to go. And even if you forget the lines, you know how the story is supposed to go and where it's going to take you.
Right.
And if you listen to that person and you engage in an honest conversation with them and you're in the moment, truly in the moment, you will be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've spent that time, you built that friendship, that chemistry that we talked about, and you're a team.
Right.
And they have your back, you have yours, and it doesn't matter what's going to happen, you can get through it. And we do talk about some worst-case scenarios or where people are going to laugh or cry or where there will be an emotional response, even potentially from the actors themselves, that once you add a live audience, there's certain things you can't predict.
Right.
But we can sort of guide that process along, and we can anticipate as much as we were able to. You know, we're going to hold for laughter here. And one of the things I do like to do, and I think if the audience is in tune with what's happening and the cast does their job, there's going to be some tears shed, which I think is a really great thing.
I think that's such a great thing for artists. It's a special thing that artists experience, especially if it's a group, whether it be a theater group or I'm thinking in terms of music group. But when you go through those experiences of artistic expression and there's a lot of work involved, you form a bond with those people that's very unique.
Yes.
You know, and that's a lot of people. I would hope that people experience that in any line of work, but I know it's particularly true in the art.
That's all the time we have for today. Thanks for tuning in, and if you want to hear this episode again, you can find it on our website, artsbr.org, and click on AC23. We'll see you next time.